What's going on, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Blue Jays, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your co-host, Lucas Weiss. I want to thank all the listeners who make Locked On Blue Jays your first listen of the day. And I also want to thank all the Locked On listeners for subscribing, liking, and reviewing the Locked On Blue Jays podcast. Of course, the Locked On Blue Jays podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher.
You are Locked On Blue Jays, your daily Toronto Blue Jays podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
On today's show, we have another busy episode ahead. And once again, joined by MLB analyst Jen Smith. And we're also joined by a very special guest. If you've read his work, you always take something new. You always learn something new about the game of baseball. He is Eno Serra, senior writer of The Athletic. Eno, welcome to the Locked On Blue Jays podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It is our pleasure. And of course, we're going to talk about a lot of different things. But last 48 hours, Eno, as Jen and I have described in the previous episodes of the podcast, have been crazy in terms of Major League Baseball right now, MLB free agency, leading into, of course, the looming lockout, but a lot of spending has happened. So I'm just curious right at the top, your thoughts on the spending spree that has happened in Major League Baseball free agency thus far.
You know, what's weird about it, I think the weirdest thing about it is that it's fairly normal in terms of how much teams are spending per sort of wins above replacement for the production they're getting. Sometimes you look at the numbers and you say, oh my God, that's a big deal. Like, for example, you look at the Corey Seager deal, 10 years, $325 million. We haven't been that used to the number three starting these deals. However, you know, inflation is a thing. In fact, this deal is, I think, about 40% less than the deal that those same Rangers gave Alex Rodriguez, if you kind of convert them to the same numbers, you know, to the same dollars. So, I think that, I've looked at sort of dollars per win. The Simeon deal was around $7 million for projected win. The Seager deal was about $11 million. I think the Baez deal might've been one of the more expensive ones. But everyone sort of uses precedent to make these deals happen and they kind of fall into precedent. There's nothing that strange about them and none of that deflation we saw for a little bit in the market.
It's interesting because, of course, many of our listeners, Blue Jays fans, and this has been a very exciting start to the offseason for the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, obviously, locking up Jose Barrios, but then, of course, the Kevin Gausman deal, 5 years. I mean, they did lose Marcus Semien, Robbie Ray, but it's clear, though, that the Blue Jays are big spenders now. I mean, it's not like years past where the Blue Jays weren't, one of the big players in the market. And now they are one of the big spenders in the AL East thus far. And the Yankees and the Red Sox have been a little bit restrained thus far. So I'm just curious your thoughts on what you've seen from the Blue Jays, thus far being one of the big spenders in the market.
Yeah, I was really surprised because I thought maybe Mark Shapiro would come from Cleveland and bring, kind of a smaller market mentality to this and not really sign any long-term deals. Maybe it's still a fact that he hasn't, the Blue Jays haven't spent, 6, 7, 10-year deals. Maybe they prefer to live in the land of 4 and 5 year deals. Maybe that's a difference there. But I love the Barrios extension. That was 7. I did a piece recently about Gausman versus Ray versus Stroman and who will age the best. I was leaning Stroman at the end of it, but certainly I think that Gausman will age better than Ray because he's just had better command and stuff numbers over the course of his career. I expect Ray to regress a little bit more than I expect Gausman to regress in the future.
I was reading that article, and for listeners, the article is titled "Of Kevin Gausman, Robbie Ray, and Marcus Stroman, which free agent starter is the best long-term bet?" And there's some really interesting statistics in that piece. I'm wondering, maybe if you could explain some of the indicators that you used in that piece, such as Stuff Plus and Location Plus, how do you go about calculating those?
Yeah, Stuff Plus looks at just the physical properties of the pitch. So you're talking about spin axis, spin rate, movement, velocity. It tries to, one of the big innovations in this, because I've been trying to put a number on stuff for like 8-9 years now. The most recent innovation to it has been defining everything off of each other. So, you know, you don't just look at raw movement. You look at movement of the fastball versus the sinker versus the slider versus, you know, you kind of look at things in context, but still it's the physical properties of the pitch. That stuff, location is just how good were the locations they showed up in. We adjust for pitch type and count and stuff like that, but it still just asks, did the pitcher put them in good locations? You know, Ray's big breakout, and anybody who's watching him knew it wasn't necessarily a stuff related breakout. You know, he did throw a little bit harder, but he threw the same two pitches he always threw. They weren't, you know, they didn't, the slider didn't have automatically just have this great different movement. It was like the same as ever. He just had better locations. You know, that was what he did in Toronto, was basically throw a little bit more to the middle of the plate and let the movement take it to the sides of the plate and just trust his stuff a little bit more in the zone. So those locations was the source of his breakout. However, on a year-to-year basis, stuff is stickier. Stuff sticks around more. Location comes and goes. I think it comes and goes with a sore hamstring or, you know, a sore back, the little injuries. When stuff disappears, that means you blew out your elbow. You know, like it's a big deal. You go on the IL. So I think stuff sticks around better. It's stickier year to year in the parlance of statistics. And so you would want to bet on stuff. And of the three, Gausman had the best stuff numbers.
One of Gausman's pitches, of course, is his splitter. How do you evaluate that pitch, and how do you see that pitch aging as he ages?
Yeah, one thing that is interesting about how it might change his age, I don't think that the splitter itself will change. I think that his fastball will change. And so, you know, as his fastball gets worse, there's a good question about how will the gap in velocity between his fastball and splitter stay the same, or will they become closer together? And that's kind of important, because if you look at Greinke has a great power changeup, but even Zach Greinke, as his changeup has been basically the same velocity as his fastball, it's been reduced in effectiveness a little bit. So, you know, there are some like velocity gap questions that you could have over time. I think that the big genius of his splitter is movement. And as long as he keeps the ride on his fastball, he should be able to play that drop of the splitter off of the fastball. And I think that's a two-pitch combo that's going to work forever. The only question I have with Gausman is number of pitches, because he's tried, you know, to develop a breaking ball, and he hasn't developed a good breaking ball. Both of his breaking balls, the slider, the cutter, the curve, he's tried all of them. They've always been nothing much more than a show me pitch, a surprise pitch. It's not necessarily something he can depend on. So as that fastball usage goes down, I just wonder what's going to happen. Is he going to do 50-50? He's already pretty close, you know, 50-50 fastball splitter. So is he going to maybe develop a better breaking ball to bring into the picture?
How do you see his stuff playing in the AL East?
It is a big question, because, you know, he gave up more homers when he was in Baltimore. But I was surprised to see that Rogers Center plays pretty fairly. It's not necessarily a hitter's park. I mean, it does augment homers a little bit, but it's not like Camden Yards. So, you know, I do wonder what it'll be like for him to return to Camden Yards, and if he will give up more homers. He also has changed a little bit since he left Camden Yards. So he now throws the splitter, you know, almost half as much as his fastball. He never really did that with Baltimore. So I think that's a significant change that should help him a little bit. Just time, knowing how to pitch to pitchers. There's a little bit of aging, positive aging effects there. But I wonder. Yankee Stadium is a tough place. He gives up homers. Camden Yards is a tough place to pitch. He gives up homers. So I think, though, compared with Berrios and Ryu, that's a really exciting threesome, because maybe one of them has a bad night. I doubt you go through the three of those and all three of them have bad nights. You know, I think you're going to have good nights from one of those guys. And then Manoah is ascendant. I think he's a very exciting young talent. So to have that much talent in the top four, even if Gausman has a step back one year or better year another year, I think that they will at least have three good pitchers every year, basically.
We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season. More props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. Yeah, and like you have Gausman, Barrios, and Manoah, you know, locked up for, you know, 5+ years of control. And this is the competitive window, you know, where the Blue Jays really want to contend for a championship. So it's really great to have you know those three pitchers, you know, under contract for that amount of years. But you know, when you look at the rotation of Gausman, Barrios, Manoah, Ryu, I mean, in your estimation, which of those Blue Jays stars would you say has the best, of those indicators that you were mentioning, stuff plus and location plus?
It's Gausman. But one of the things that always pop for me on Barrios in my list, and is true for Gausman, is when you look at the guys who have both sort of 10% better than league average stuff and command. The list is amazing. It's beautiful. And it includes both Barrios and Gausman. So you're talking about arms like Barrios, Gausman, Woodruff, Julio Urias in Los Angeles, Jacob deGrom, Gerrit Cole. So like you're talking about the best of the best. And so it's really good that they managed to find guys that they didn't have to spend $35, $40 million on. You know, Scherzer's in that group, you know. They could have spent $40 million on him. Instead, they kind of were like, let's get a bunch of sort of $20 million, $25 million talents. And you know, in any given year, like I said, with the kind of the way that your command comes and goes, I think that one of the biggest sources of like a career year, as you've just seen with Ray, I think, is just the command is great in the great year, you know. And you just have good command all year. And that's why you have these great years. And then the other years, the command steps back a little bit. You step back a little bit. But that's why pitching is so hard to on a 1 year level. That's why it's nice to have them locked up for 4 or 5. You know, you may have a clunker in there one time, but you've got them for a while.
It's interesting that you mentioned the fact that, you know, the Blue Jays, you know, were able to get some of these guys thus far, you know, not for the Scherzer level contract. And when you think of years past, I mean, the thought always with the Blue Jays is, oh, you have to pay that extra year, or oh, you may have to pay more in payroll to get a guy. I mean, I think of Ryu, for example, the extra year. You can make a case George Springer last year. But what do you think that says, you know, about the Blue Jays where they are right now, that they are able to get guys that are, you know, top tier free agents, not having to pay and open the complete vault like, you know, the New York Mets did with Max Scherzer?
Yeah, I think there's two competing things going on. I think it does matter what the team looks like, how competitive the team is, if they think that they can win a championship with that team, what their legacy will be. Will they be part of a championship team? I think that definitely matters to players. The other thing that matters, I think, that has worked against probably Toronto in the past is not necessarily that people thought they were terrible or this or that. I would say that the tax ramifications for players signing with Toronto are probably fairly tough in terms of, you know, I think that the taxes they would pay are up there with the California teams. And that's something that they've said locally here. I'm in Northern California. They said Brian Sabian and other team players, other managers that have run general managers that have run the Giants have said that they felt that they were always competing with other teams on an uneven way. If you look at Corey Seager, for example, the Dodgers would have had to offer about $350 million just to have the same amount of money going into Corey Seager's pocket, because in Texas there is no income tax in the same way. So You pay basically where you play. So you can mitigate that by living in Texas in the off season and playing in Toronto during the season, but you still will pay more taxes in certain places. So I think that probably has mattered in the past. There are really smart things you can do. You can give a big signing bonus because they'll get that bonus where they live. Before they ever show up in Toronto, they get taxed on that bonus in Texas, for example. You can defer payments, and usually players don't want deferred payments, but in this case, it might actually make sense for them to get paid after they leave Toronto back in Texas, for example. So, but I think those are the two main, those are right. Like, if you think about it, if you were a free agent, the two things that would matter is like, who am I going to work with and how much they're going to get paid?
Yeah. Right.
All this stuff about like how good are the restaurants in your city, like honestly, I've been to Toronto; they're awesome.
Yeah, no, I agree.
The food in Toronto is great. I love that city. So I don't think the city itself matters as much as who you're going to work with, like how good is the team and how much money they're going to pay you.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, actually, that you brought up the tax situation, because I had somebody message me just about an hour ago saying that that's something that people aren't talking about, is the taxes that a player might have to pay, you know, signing with Toronto versus other teams. And to be honest, it wasn't something that I had even sort of, my mind hadn't gone there yet. So really interesting that you actually bring that up. With regards to the Jays, you wrote another piece earlier this month, In Search of the Next Robbie Ray, a bargain strikeout pitcher who could break out. So the Blue Jays, of course, are set up quite nicely right now with the rotation in terms of Barrios, Gausman, Ryu, and Manoa. I would argue that they need to add one more starting pitcher. I personally don't want to bank on either Ross Stripling or on Nate Pearson's health. Who do you see the Blue Jays potentially targeting that is maybe, you know, lower end of the scale in terms of money, but might actually have the potential to be the next Robbie Ray?
Yeah, I think that list is running out quickly.
Yeah.
As you can see, all these sort of one-year deals got signed pretty early. Andrew Haney was like the first signing, and he was one of the big names on my list. Going to the Dodgers. And, you know, one of the things that was, you know, there may not be a Robbie Ray every season because, you know, frankly, that was a kind of a crazy scenario on the 1 year deal. That's about the best you could get as a Cy Young, you know. But if you look for strikeouts, if you think the stuff is there, you're gonna have to see him throw. But Chris Archer has always had the strikeouts, and he's not going to give you the length, but he's got a good strikeout rate. So if you kind of look for that, the other thing that I like is Rich Hill in that sort of in that mold of a veteran who will come and give us 100, 120 innings. The stuff number really likes him. If his command pops, you could get a really good innings from him. A lot of curse words. He's probably the most prolific. Lance Lynn, Liam Hendricks, and Rich Hill are on the on Mount Rushmore for cursing. But it's risky. The reason that they're risky is that either one of those guys, Hill or Archer, could only give you 50 innings before the arm goes or whatever. But the nice thing is, if you do that, then Nate Pearson. Not everyone's looking at Nate Pearson. You know what I mean? Like not everyone's writing about Nate Pearson. Not everyone's like, what are you going to do this year, Nate? You know, not everyone's like following around in spring training. So you get Hill, you get Arch, you take the pressure off of Pearson. If he pitches his way into it, you only spent $4 or $5 million on Archer or Hill, and you can move them to the bullpen or do whatever. Or you can ease Pearson in at the major level in the bullpen, or you can throw him to the minor leagues. But either way, you're not like, we have to put Pearson in the spot. And I think that's something that the Rays did really well last year, right? They signed a bunch of veterans, and as those veterans got hurt and, you know, like as they got shuttled off the team, their youth kind of rose to the top. But Shane Baz didn't have to show up on day one in Tampa. And that's one thing that I think Pearson could benefit from.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point because, you know, of course, there has been so much pressure on him. He's an exciting prospect. He throws hard. Everybody loves a guy who throws 100+, although there's more of those guys now, right? But, you know, the excitement that he generated. And then, of course, you know, between injuries and other issues, you know, so far it hasn't exactly panned out. And, you know, who knows, maybe he ends up as a bullpen piece at some point. Maybe they end up pivoting. The Jays recently added to their bullpen by signing Yimi Garcia. And I would say that their work in terms of adding to the bullpen is not done. Are there any bullpen pieces that you could see fitting in nicely with the Blue Jays right now?
Yeah, it is interesting because I really respect Julian Merriweather and Jordan Romano. Obviously, Merriweather has had a hard time staying healthy, so you kind of can't count on him as someone that you're going to write down in pen. So, you know, right now I would say it's sort of Romano, Garcia, and then you've got the funk with Simber and Mizo and Richards. You might be looking for one more power arm in a traditional sense there. Maybe Hatch or Thornton. And is Thornton still hurt? Do you have surgery? He could be playing this year, right? Thornton?
I think so. Yeah. No, I think so. Yep.
And Hatch, you know, they're both kind of hurt, but like maybe one of those guys can step into it. The answer could be within. You know, I do have, you know, the free agents sorted by stuff for relievers. And in fact, a funny thing about stuff and these models, this pitching plus model, it beats projections for relievers. Because if you think about it, relievers are so wed to their stuff in any given year, right? Like you only get like a 40 or 50 inning sample and you're supposed to project off of that. It's much easier to look at their pitches and look at how good their pitches were. And that determines how good they are. It's a lot, you know, starters have multiple pitches. Maybe they have some deception. Maybe they have some command that you're not capturing. Relievers, it's really like, how hard do you throw? How good does your stuff look, right? So Aaron Loop was number one. He signed. Iglesias is still out there. He's number two on this list. But if they don't want to spend big, you know, they could check in with Jimmy Nelson, who was oft hurt. Daniel Hutchins just got signed. But there's Heath Hembree, Adam Ottavino. You know, I think Ottavino would actually be a really good signing. He's comfortable with the division. He's got that really nice breaking ball and, you know, he can close too sometimes. So, Adam Ottavino or Corey Knebel, those are the two, that I like best still on the board.
It's interesting because obviously, I mean, we've talked about, you know, free agency, but, you know, one of the things that Jed and I have talked about on previous podcast episodes is the element of the trade. And I feel like if you listen to a lot of sports talk radio in Toronto and read different articles from different reporters around the team, I mean, the trade is still out there. And certainly for the Blue Jays right now, one of their glaring needs, you know, is the infield. I mean, losing a guy like Marcus Semien, I mean, that's a big hole on that, you know, for second base, given the production that he had last year, similar to Robbie Ray, a little bit of a bet on yourself type of year for Marcus Semien. So do you sort of see that, you know, avenue for the Blue Jays in terms of the trade? I mean, I know Jose Ramirez was thrown around at the deadline for the third base side, but curious just your thoughts on, you know, how the Blue Jays can maybe improve their infield.
I mean, whatever they can do to get Jose Ramirez, they should do it. So if that's right on the table. One problem with the sort of buying from a seller idea in the off season is that everyone feels better about their team in the off season.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, it's kind of harder to identify an obvious seller in the off season. Cause even the Twins are out here signing guys. They just signed Byron Buxton. You know, they were, you know, the third or fourth worst team in the AL last year. So the Orioles seem plundered. I don't see an infielder that they need to necessarily add from the Orioles. The Pirates have really young guys on their infield and don't really seem to have, you know, an obvious thing. You know, I guess, you know, I would look at Ketel Marte in Arizona as a possibility. Then the list runs dry a little bit because you're looking at the bottom. The Rangers are at the bottom and they just signed everybody. Maybe they feel like maybe Kiner Falefa is available, but Kiner Falefa is mostly a defensive guy, so he's not really going to help. I think you could just put Espinal at third and probably have the same sort of package where it's right. Am I getting Espinal right? He's kind of a defense first guy, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think that Ketel Marte would be interesting. Ketel Marte is going to be very interesting to a lot of people, though, because he's on a team-friendly deal. And Arizona might just say, no, hey, we're trying to build around him. So I only did sort of a quick scanning, but there's no like team where I'm like, oh yeah, that team has an extra infielder. You should talk to them. Maybe, I guess I've heard a little bit of a rumbling about Adalberto Mondesi from the Royals, but I don't know if he fits the profile that the Blue Jays seem to like offensively. And it would have to be, they think that they're just getting him cheap.
One of the internal options for the Blue Jays infield is Kevin Biggio. And he hasn't exactly panned out the way people were hoping. He's had injury concerns and so forth. Do you see him having a regular role on this team, considering the fact that the Blue Jays are out there spending money and are trying to contend not just for a playoff spot, but for an actual World Series? What do you see Kevin Biggio's role as being on this team? Do you see him having a major role moving forward?
Yeah. I think so. I'm a fan. I'm not going to say he's a star or anything, but he projects to be an above average bat. I'm hurriedly trying to look up here what his outs above average is, because the thing that keeps him from being an average player on Fangraphs by the projections is his defense. I think that he's an okay defender. I mean, what do you got? You guys watch him more. Like, what do you think of his defense?
I mean, it could be better. Like, I, you know, I think, you know, with Kevin,
minus 6 outs above average.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just, for me, like, I mean, he came into the league as this, you know, utility guy and whatnot. Right. But I don't know. Like, I mean, as Jen said, the injuries concern me. And I just think, you know, you can find better out there, in my opinion.
Yeah, he might be one of those things where it's like, you know, situations where it's good while he's cheap, you know, you just kind of plug him in and you are looking for better eventually. But, I do think the bat will rebound. I mean, I believe in his patience. I think the power will rebound. I think that having that sort of an eye at the plate is a really good place to start. I think he will be a league average or better bat next year. And maybe they can, in his early years, while he's cheap, hide him at second or third and get along with it. So I think if they got one infielder, they'd be fine. I mean, I think asking for two is getting greedy too.
little bit.
I think the cheap options I see for Toronto are kind of like Cesar Hernandez, and put Biggio at third. That wouldn't be bad. Cesar, that, you know, between Hernandez and Biggio, you get a lot of walks, you know, right. you get good patience. And they'd be interesting guys to have at sort of 6, 7, 8, you know, down at the bottom of the lineup. I think they'd be fine. And they wouldn't cost you much. And then the big prize, I think the biggest fit out there left for the Blue Jays is, of course, Chris Bryant, I think.
Yeah.
Because just having like a real third baseman who's also a real presence in the lineup would be pretty exciting. I mean, the question is how much longevity, like how much power does, how's the power going to age? How's the swing going to age? In San Francisco for the first time, they started questioning his defense actually. So there are some concerns, and then just how much does he want?
Right.
So, right. Yeah. But he brings that World Series experience. I mean, from 2016,
it'd be pretty funny to have Bryant and Springer on the same team and win a championship with them. And then we'd have to hear forever about veteran presence and how experience matters, probably.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably. The We don't have too much time, but I know, you know, I mean, you know, we've talked about, you know, stuff plus, you know, location plus your projections, your models. And I think for, you know, people read your stuff and they certainly learn a lot. There's a lot of numbers involved there. And I mean, I'm curious for, you know, someone like myself, you know, who wouldn't even know where to begin with some of these models, projections, just, you know, knows like slash line war, you know, you know, stats like that. Like, where do you sort of begin in terms of not only just understanding, you know, the stuff that you write about, but also incorporating it into stories that make sense for the reader?
Yeah. I mean, one thing that helps is just I've been doing it for a while now. So the other thing I would say is just read. You know, the way that I broke in was basically just reading. Rob Nyer used to have an article, a column at ESPN where he would just link to the best news that was out there. And I would just click every link and read everything on, it ended up being, you know, Fangraphs, Baseball for Sexes, Sports Blog Nation. And I would read all of these different things. And just over time, got more comfortable with them. The big thing, you know, for me at The Athletic, leaving Fangraphs is, you know, sort of realizing at Fangraphs, I could have just assumed that everybody would know all the jargon, would know all the different stats, and would have been following along all the way. So what I'm trying to do, and the big struggle for me at The Athletic, is just to make sure that I explain enough, not too much, don't bog down the whole story with just all statistics, and try to educate, but also not just spend tons of text explaining every stat. So it is an ongoing thing that I think about all the time. In terms of where I would go, I think that, you know, Twitter is a valuable resource because there are a lot of people out there that you can ask questions of. If you see a stat you don't understand, you can directly ask the person that shared it, and what is the stat, and, you know, where can I learn more? Another place that I've found value in is the glossary at Fangraphs, where it kind of explains every stat that's on there and kind of even gives you sometimes like a way to calculate it or how it's calculated. And so you get a good idea of what's under the hood there. So I think those are the two valuable resources are Twitter and Fangraphs.
So speaking of projections, you know, a way too early projection for the Toronto Blue Jays in 2022. A lot needs to happen. I mean, you know, maybe I'm a little bit cart before the horse here in terms of where the Blue Jays are, but you know, your thoughts on what fans might see from this team in 2022.
All right. Well, you know, one of the best stat, the single stat that is best correlated to team wins is wins above replacement. That's why it's been so popular. That's why you end up seeing contracts line up by that number. And the reason why is because it combines defense, offense, and base running onto one number. The Blue Jays currently, by Fangraphs depth charts, I don't have it sorted. Here we go. The Blue Jays are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th in the big leagues, in a virtual tie with the Astros. For some reason, I'm a little surprised by this. They come up short on the Yankees by 4 wins. The biggest difference between the two is the outfield. The Yankees are projected for 11 wins in the outfield, and the Blue Jays are projected for 7 or 8. Fangraphs doesn't love the corner outfield for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
it does give Biggio a league average rating at second. And it gives Espinal league average rating with the defense at third. And it says that the weak points, I guess, are Teoscar and Lourdes. But to me, I think those guys are at least league average guys. And I'd be happy to go to bat with them. I think an infielder would help them, and maybe an arm. But as it stands, I would put them in the first wild card in the American League.
Ooh, wow. Blue Jays fans have a lot of good memories of being in a wild card game. 2016, of course. I went to Encarnacion walk-off homer against the Baltimore Orioles. Well,
but recently the Yankees have also shown the ability to come up short and not be as good as the sum of their parts. So You know, if it is the Yankees they're looking up at, maybe that's all right. Maybe the Yankees will fall short and they win the division. I mean, they have excellent young talent. And what's great about it, too, is there are enough players on this team where you could say, you know, there could be another level. You know, like Vlad could win an MVP. You know, I think Lourdes showed it wasn't a great season. You know, it was a kind of an average season in whole, but in times he was really good. The second half was a lot better than the first half, if I remember it correctly. And then Teoscar, you know, was white hot. And I think projections are maybe missing some changes he's made in his game. So, you know, there's a lot to like there.
Well, Eno Saris is a baseball analytics writer for The Athletic. I highly recommend, if you're interested in baseball and analytics, to follow and read his work. You can follow him on Twitter at Eno Saris. And I'm sure, you're a fan of weird beer, good sandwiches, right? Yeah. So I'm sure, you know, the tweet's also baseball, beer, and sandwiches. You can't go wrong. But we really appreciate you coming on
the Finer Things in Life
podcast.
Yes. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Eno. Great to have you.